Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. We're going to kick things off today as we hit the midpoint in the Connecticut-wide Yoga in Our City movement for 2021. That's continuing through mid-October. We're going to remind you how you can tap into free virtual yoga classes to stay in shape and achieve peace of mind from the comfort of your home, or you can jump right into the 2021 season of outdoor community yoga classes designed by Civic Mind and sponsored by Connecticare in this replay of an earlier segment that we did this year. Then we're going to let you in on how easy it is to get back to or begin exploring possible future careers with our regional community college system. We're going to talk about what's in store if you're heading into or returning to community college in a few weeks, and a convenient way to take care of all the registration details at the August 21st Enroll in a Day event. Then we're going to close combining public safety with one of the state's newest cutting-edge industries, drone production and pilot training. You'll learn how Aquiline Drones is aiming to not only bring drone production back to the U.S., but how this company is helping municipal public safety agencies like fire departments obtain and utilize drone technology to keep residents and responders safe as we show up and do this interview at the Waterbury Fire Department. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. It's been 31 years since the passing of the Americans with Disabilities Act, a landmark federal law that protects the rights of all people with disabilities. And while disabled individuals represent 1 in 5 Americans, these folks are twice as likely to be unemployed or underemployed than those without disabilities. So we're reminding employers and business owners that Disability Inn and its affiliates like Disability Inn Connecticut are working to empower businesses here in the state and around the world to advance disability inclusion and equality by training business leaders in best practices that can give them a competitive edge when hiring. So if you'd like more information, just go to disabilityinct.org. Well, here we are, the first full weekend in March, and our New Year's resolutions to get in better shape or maybe just relax a little bit more are probably a dim and distant memory, if we even remember it at all. But we're going to help you get back on track. That's right. Time for your March resolutions. And one of the big players that's going to help you achieve it is Yoga in Our City. This movement typically offers free outdoor yoga classes at parks in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, and Waterbury during the summer. But due to its success and the current increased demand for programs to provide people physical and mental health benefits, Yoga in Our City is expanding to offer free virtual classes through May, which will both serve as an entree to the outdoor 2021 season, but also help you get ready for it. Maybe you want to stretch and bend in your own home before you go and put yourself out there in a public park. And we have got the perfect person to clue us in about it. Yoga in Your City partner, Connecticare's Kimberly Kahn, is with us. She's Senior Director of Public Relations and Corporate Communications at Connecticare. And as we indicated, this program is being brought to you and designed by an organization called Civic Mind. We're going to find all about that as well as this program and tell you how to get involved. Kimberly, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, John. I'm so happy to be with you today.
Glad to be able to get you off the mat for a few minutes and get you on the phone to get other people mat bound for this this virtual free session, at least leading up to the summer. And let's go back in history. Flashes back to 2013 when this whole Yoga in Our City program started. What's the backstory?
Sure. Well, the program was created by Civic Mind, which is a community development organization led by TJ Clinch. And the desire was to get people out into parks around the state with yoga, Connecticut. And just as you mentioned, the whole premise is to bring yoga classes to Connecticut residents at parks in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, and Waterbury. The great thing about the program is that the classes are open to residents of all ages, skill levels, backgrounds. They're free. We encourage people, bring the whole family, come on out and reap the benefits of yoga. And the classes typically run, as you referenced, over the summertime. We like to start them around Memorial Day and have them run until the end of September. And the classes are all taught by yoga instructors. So many people that attend have actually, experienced yoga classes in other locations with the instructors. So it's a really nice way to bring together people to do something healthy in a park where they can really enjoy the benefits of the park as well.
Yeah, and let's not wait another second to give a big shout out and thank you to all the local yoga instructors who are partnering in many cases with other city agencies who kind of already have relationships with certain segments of the populations in their cities and regions so that they can kind of better entice people to get involved. I think a lot of people hear yoga and they're instantly flashing to these, pretzel-like shapes. And people like me would rather just reach for the pretzel than to become shaped like one. But in fact, as I've been told when I made an inquiry last year, where could I find yoga for fat people? The person just looked at me and said, "You mean yoga?" So
right,
it's really for everyone, but thanks to all the yoga instructors that are stepping up for the Yoga in Our City programs this year, both virtually and in person. So Kinetic Air has been such a fantastic reference here on the award-winning For the People, whether it's talking about corporate wellness, diabetes prevention, overall community health. This program seems like the perfect fit for Kinetic Care's mission to become more involved in community and public health outreach. Tell us more about how Kinetic Care found the program and really kind of blew it up into much greater proportions and are bringing in a lot more people into it, at least up to now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, couldn't agree more. It's a perfect fit for our mission to create healthier futures for our members and communities. Giving back has always been a part of our culture. So the idea of bringing people together for this common goal of, enjoying the benefits of yoga, building community, all of these pieces really attracted us as a sponsor. And when the program was first launched, it was offered in Hartford. And it was hugely successful. So we said, hey, we want to expand the program and add in additional cities. So we added in Bridgeport, New Haven, and Waterbury. And in some parks, that the program draws, more than 100 participants to the classes. So huge following, very loyal folks come out. And we actually have people that travel around to different parks throughout the week in different cities and take the classes. And, in the parks, there's plenty of room for people to spread out. So they get to enjoy the benefits of the park itself, the mental and physical benefits of yoga in a safe environment. And we were so happy that we were able to actually get into the parks last summer. We started a little bit later than usual, although we were able to get out and still do our program. And that's kind of what led us to decide that we needed to add a virtual component. We wanted to be able to get people back into the Yoga in Our City fold or habit and do it in a safe way. So that's where we came up with the idea for virtual classes to start in March and get people ready and excited to go back into the parks as soon as we can do that.
Our program was a little late on the upswing. Yeah, there's actually been some virtual classes happening for the past couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, there's, there are virtual classes out there that people can take. We wanted to really get the Yoga in Our City program kicked off. What we're doing is kind of a neat thing. We're actually pre-recording the classes in our ConnectiCare centers, and they'll be archived on the website so people can actually access them kind of wherever and whenever they would like to take a class. So we're going to have new classes coming out, a few times a week. And as I mentioned a moment ago, we're going to continue them until the in-person program begins. We know that people are still feeling, uncertain about attending classes indoors due to the pandemic. And as everyone is excited about getting back into the park, we thought this was really a good time to get these virtual classes underway. So we were really excited to kind of get people geared up and ready to go back into being together in the park.
Now, are some of these instructors that folks are going to meet virtually before the live sessions begin in the warmer weather, are they instructors who, or is it an instructor who was tied to the program in one of the municipalities over the past couple of years?
Well, we're using a variety of instructors, so there's a good possibility if someone does one of the virtual classes that they'll see the instructor out in a park.
Very good. How many sessions are people able to access at this point now that you're ramping up with the virtual yoga classes?
Well, there's a couple that are available currently, but this coming week, the week of March 8th, we're going to start adding more sessions, and we plan to add at least three every week, and they're easily accessed. They can be accessed through our website, through ConnectiCare.com. They can also be accessed through the Yoga in Our City website, and that is YogaInOurCity.com. So there'll be the virtual classes, will be there. Information about the virtual sessions and the upcoming outdoor programs will be posted there over the coming weeks as well.
Yeah. And people
there's
still
also,
oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I was going to say, there's also Yoga in Our City has a social media presence on both Facebook and Instagram. And there's a lot of additional information there as well.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. You know, ConnectiCare is so great about aligning groups and aligning people and peers and neighborhoods and families together over like-minded initiatives, whether, as I said, it's corporate wellness or community programs like Yoga in Your City, which ConnectiCare is bringing now virtually and will bring in person to parks across our major cities in Connecticut in the summer. One of the things, as you mentioned, is people can kind of get into it now in their own home, get to feel comfortable in the clothes, get to feel comfortable with some of the basic exercises, and start enjoying the fact that in a few weeks they'll be able to do things they never thought they'd be able to even manage on their first virtual yoga session. But there's also that social aspect. And as you said, people can get involved and get in on the social networks and get to know others, perhaps, who will then join them. Or, as you sort of pointed out earlier, which is really exciting, is they may get to, you know, some folks in Waterbury may make new friends in Hartford and then be able to do maybe the Waterbury Park yoga class on a Tuesday and then go and visit Hartford, say, if they're having the yoga sessions on a Friday, and maybe meet these new friends and create a whole new relationship all over this fantastic Yoga in Your City program. So this is a fantastic opportunity and really well in line with ConnectiCare's kind of more overall system and protocols, right?
Absolutely. You know, we believe in the health of the whole person. So that involves, you know, physical, mental, spiritual health. We believe that yoga, it does allow people to really benefit. So going back to something you said earlier, these programs are for everyone. No experience is needed. Getting involved from the comfort and safety of your own home is a nice way to get a jump on being in those in-person classes in the parks. And we really encourage people to check it out. Do it with your kids. Do it with, you know, whoever you live with, or do it alone. If you're a little unsure or uncertain about, you know, the poses, absolutely put your computer on, you know, no pressure, wear whatever you like, no experience needed. Classes are free, and we really do encourage people to check it out.
And it all starts by just clicking on yogainourcity.com or visiting the ConnecticutCare.com website and getting information and getting signed up. And you're right at that beautiful sweet spot where it's all just getting started. You don't need to feel like you need to catch up, because it's not about that. It's about whatever you can put into it on any given session. And then if you get in on this virtual program now, by the time the parks open up in the warmer weather, you'll be ready to show off your new yoga self out at the parks, and maybe meet some new friends or bring some other folks who never thought they'd get involved in yoga. This is a fantastic thing. Really appreciate you cluing us in on all the details. Kimberly Kahn is at ConnecticutCare. She's a communications representative, and ConnecticutCare, of course, the sponsor of this great program, Yoga in Our City, designed by Civic Mind. Yogainourcity.com, once again, is where you can sign up, or just go to visit ConnecticutCare.com and learn more about it. Kimberly, thank you so much for your time this morning, and we'll look forward to chatting a little bit more, hopefully in the summertime, about yoga in our city, or maybe even doing a For the People segment from one of the yoga classes. How about that?
That sounds great, John. Thank you so much for having me on, and I will look forward to seeing you for that session in the park.
Excellent. Thank you, Kimberly. So good to be talking about getting back to school and what getting back to school means at the college level with my guest this morning, Ivy Gard. She is the Regional Associate Dean of Communications and Marketing for the Connecticut State Community College's Shoreline West region, which includes Gateway Community College, Housatonic Community College, and Norwalk Community College. We've got a lot to talk about, including their upcoming Enroll in a Day event coming up on August 21st. But there's a lot more to talk about before we get there, Evie. How are you doing, and how are things going at our three local community colleges?
Thank you, John. Things are going really well. We're very busy. After a year and a half of being online only, we've added about 40% of our classes on campus, and we are acclimating to a new normal with hybrid courses. And so the choices at the community colleges have been broadened, and we are very excited to offer flexible schedules and get people back into education. So things are going very well, and we are here to meet everyone's needs and get them back into the classroom one way or another.
Excellent. So I know the first thing we want to talk about are the ways to continue education at the community college level. I had great luck at community college, and I have to say, both the atmosphere and the quality of the educators and the social opportunities were all really fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about the different ways that these community colleges here in the region can go about educating folks.
So it's been a really interesting season as we navigated education through the pandemic, because we started to wonder how we're going to keep students engaged. And yeah, that college experience is priceless, and it pays you back in so many ways, right? Not just in what you've learned in the classroom, but what you learn from fellow students and from your teachers and from people on staff who are helping. And so what we've done is we have a lot of virtual events, and we continued those. And now those virtual events will also be on site for the students who are taking classes on campus. So that experience, that idea that we are a community and that there's more to it than just learning a program or a career path is still a part of our identity. And we feel like it's been enriched because we've expanded it so much. We actually perfected the idea that you don't have to be on site to get that experience. But, you know, if you are on site, you get it and you expand it through meeting people also virtually. So that's one new thing that we're very excited about. The other thing is that those students who are new to college, who've never had any college, are still eligible for the Connecticut Pledge to Advance CT program, which makes up the difference after you get grants from federal government and state grants. It makes up the difference. So college becomes debt free and you're not in debt when you leave us and, you know, either transfer or go into your career. So that's still ongoing for new students who've never had any college credit. We have also got a lot of attention paid to the emotional needs of people who have had a hard time these last 18 months. So there's counseling, there are seminars on various, you know, things you can do to make your experience easier and to cope. People have families. We have daycare on the campuses. So there's a lot of reasons to consider pursuing or continuing or coming back to pursue your degree so that you can move on with your life and be ready whatever happens.
And while we hear a lot out in the job market about being having a lot of open positions and not enough people to fill them, what I'm sensing is that a lot of those openings, or many of them, are in kind of frontline retail and service jobs that really are just kind of punch the clock. You get trained how to do it and you do it. While the community college system, as you pointed out, can really prepare people for careers. And as you mentioned before we went on the air this morning, folks that do have careers or had careers when COVID hit, they did better than folks that were just kind of punching the clock and not pursuing some kind of specific area of expertise or training.
Right. So some industries really did suffer. So the colleges do prepare people for some of the careers that require you to be there. So, for example, our automotive programs, our culinary programs, our nursing programs, our allied health programs, which were very, very active and busy. So depending on the industry and what was required, some businesses and some careers did really hit a bump in the road. Others were strapped for people. So we saw a great increase in the allied health and in the nursing and in the nursing assistants and all the medical careers. The culinaries kept training and were resourceful in providing, you know, curbside pickup instead of shutting the restaurants down altogether. So people who had the skill sets did fare better than people who were in careers that didn't require any sort of higher level training. So, you know, I don't want to call them lower level. I think they're very important, but there were industries that really suffered. The thing about the community colleges at Norwalk, at Housatonic, at Gateway, is that a lot of our career track programs come with internships, and the hiring rates, especially in the areas of automotive and manufacturing and in the medical field, those hiring rates are massive. They're high because the students have done their clinicals or they've done their internships. They get to know the employers and the employers want to keep them. Very so good. We do understand and we are sensitive to the fact that people have been a little traumatized. But I think that, you know, one of the things we're saying in our marketing is keep going, keep reaching, keep learning. It shouldn't deter you, which is why we're so pleased that we have all these options.
Excellent.
So well, we're going to people into college. Yeah.
Oh, no, I was going to say we're going to take a quick break. Evie Gard is with us. She's the Regional Associate Dean of Communications and Marketing for the Connecticut State Community College's Shoreline West Region, Gateway Community College, Housatonic Community College, and Norwalk Community College. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about what you're going to expect when you get back to or arrive at one of these community colleges this fall, as well as a really easy way to enroll in a day and get yourself all set up to learn. We'll be right back with Evigard in just a moment. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence is looking for leaders working across Connecticut to improve the lives of domestic violence survivors and their children. We know people across Connecticut have been stepping up in their local communities to support survivors and ensure access to the life-saving services provided by the Connecticut Coalition Against Domestic Violence and their 18-member organizations. So it's time to recognize that leadership and commitment to this movement by nominating them to the CCADV's first 100+ class of 2021. To learn more and get your nomination in, and for information on attending or sponsoring the 11th annual breakfast and awards ceremony, just visit ctcadv.org. All right, we're back, and here we are, early August, but we're thinking about back to school at the college level. Evigard is with us. She's the Regional Associate Dean of Communications and Marketing for the Connecticut State Community College's Shoreline West region, which incorporates our friends down at Gateway Community College, Housatonic Community College, and Norwalk Community College. So, Evie, when folks are going back to school, you want to make sure that they're aware of various health requirements and opportunities to learn in a way that they're most comfortable, whether it's in person or virtual, right?
Right. So the Board of Regents for Higher Education in Connecticut has instituted a required vaccine mandate for people who are going to be on site, who are going to take classes on campus. And that that program, there's more about that at ct.edu. You can look up all the requirements. But there are also pathways to exemption, medical exemption, and other reasons that people may not want to vaccinate. And then the other thing is that if you're taking strictly online classes, then we want you to be vaccinated. But, you know, you can take an online class, and if you're not coming to campus, we aren't going to ask that question. We aren't going to check on that. So if you're taking online classes, so if you have a real reason for not getting vaccinated, which we are hoping people will, just for the social responsibility and protecting themselves and their families and their neighbors. But if for some reason, and there are exceptions, somebody doesn't want to get vaccinated, that doesn't mean they can't come to college. It just means that they're going to take the online option until they resolve that, or until the law changes, or it's not the law, but it's a rule.
Yes, emergency declaration, yeah.
Right. So we're also on all three campuses holding vaccine clinics on a regular basis. Each campus website can tell you when those are. They're walk-in. They're open to the community. So if somebody decides, after all, that they want to be vaccinated and they've decided they do want to come on campus for classes, that is very easy. And these are all sponsored by health clinics in the local area. So those are on site. Yep.
Well, speaking of making it easy, you want to make it easy for folks to get registered, too. And it's not going to take having to pencil in various points in your calendar over an entire week's time or more. You're right. Doing enroll in a day. And this is a program that's been really successful for you folks so far. And you've got another event coming up on August 21st. In the last couple minutes that we have with you, give us the lowdown on enroll in a day.
So enroll in a day is on Saturday, August 21st at all three campuses, Gateway, Housatonic, and Norwalk. And students should be able to go online ahead of time and register if they want for an appointment and to find out what they need to bring, because you do need to be a high school graduate to go to a community college. You do have to have your immunization record from everything else that you were immunized against as a child. And those are documents there. If you're applying for financial aid ahead of time, you should probably go to fafsa.gov, FAFSA.gov, and fill out your initial financial aid application. That will expedite any awards you can get for tuition and help with that. And then at an enroll in a day, you'll have advisors, counselors, the registrar, the financial aid office. Everybody who's there to help you process your application will be there to talk to you and guide you through, and then help you choose your classes. So that's what those days are for. And we're very excited because it's going to be kind of a party-like atmosphere as well. So because it's close, school starts on the 26th of August. So that gives us a full week of people who are coming in and getting their process going before classes begin. So that's what Enroll in a Day is all about.
All kinds of great opportunities at Connecticut's community colleges, particularly the ones closest to our radio stations in the Shoreline West region, Gateway Community College, Housatonic Community College, and Norwalk Community College. We really appreciate all this inside information today from Evelyn Gard. Evie is the Regional Associate Dean of Communications and Marketing for the Connecticut State Community Colleges Shoreline West Region. Evie, thank you so much for your time today, and best of luck with the August 21st Enroll in a Day session. Well, from the wildfires out west to a tragic building collapse down in Florida, we know that firefighters, wherever they may be, paid or volunteer, are on call for us 24/7. And we'd like to think that they always have the best tools and technology, the cutting edge tools that they need to do the best job to protect our lives and property. And one of the newer tools that's being utilized by fire services are drones. And we're so pleased to finally, as I said in the hallway, meet in three dimensions, in a three-dimensional presence. Barry Alexander, I've been watching his progress and success as the founder and CEO of Aquiline Drones. And I'm also pleased to be here in the office of Waterbury Fire Chief Terry Ballew. And we're going to be talking about drones in fire service during this chat. And Barry is not only extending the expertise of his company and his team to emergency service providers here in Connecticut, but around the country in any place that they may need it. So, Barry, before we start talking about specifically how you want to help train the next generation of fire service responders in the use of Aquiline drones, tell us just a little bit of background about your new company.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Fire Chief Ballew. Aquiline has been around for the better part of 7 years, and it somewhat represents a culmination of everything, you know, we've done in our professional aviation lives, which the upper management over at Aquiline Drones are essentially, you know, veteran aviators. And when we speak of drones, they fall squarely within the ambit of aviation. And so this effort somewhat celebrates on a larger scale aviation for what we know it to be. Today we find, you know, many good use cases that are very, very, you know, beneficial to society as far as, you know, what drones are used for. And, you know, first responders specific to firefighting can benefit from the use of drones as far as providing that, you know, aerial perspective that was never available before. So here we are adding a third dimension to an environment that can benefit from, you know, either, you know, first response, allowing, you know, the firehouse or, you know, the department to coordinate and better utilize, in most cases, resources, but also with post-fire, you know, ops, you know, training as far as what could have been done better to ensure that going forward we rely and use technology as much as we can to promote and provide a better outcome.
Mm. Sort of like watching films after a sporting event to kind of fine-tune the running back or the plays.
Absolutely, and we definitely have the capability and capacity to provide that technology today. And so I'm very happy that we are able to do that with, the Waterbury Fire Department, but also with first responders, i.e. law enforcement and firefighters nationwide.
Well, 7 years ago, we had Radio Shack and Toys R Us. Both are gone, I guess. But drones were basically, I guess, referred to by most of the general public as toys. You were pretty far ahead of the curve in realizing the commercial applications of drone use. Tell us some of the other ways that Aqualine drones are being utilized out in the world.
That's a very good question. As far as how drones were originally perceived, they were perceived as gadgetry or toys, yeah, essentially.
Or in a Bond film as a military tool.
Yes. But today we have a plethora of use cases, such as search and rescue, law enforcement, forest fire, mitigation and fighting, heavy asset inspection, i.e. bridges, tunnels, cell phone towers, everything from A to Z that requires some advanced, reconnaissance for the benefit of providing, real-time data insights is what drones are capable of doing. And we do have the mature technology today that, helped us catapult from, where we were before, where drones were recognized as gadgetry. Equally important is the acceptance of the public, knowing that there was a misperception of drones, and that we now begin to better understand how they can benefit society in a very safe and responsible way. And so, once we have the public on board, there comes the advocacy and the embracement of drone technology.
Yeah, on the other side of it, we also saw over the past 7 years the government getting involved, the FAA getting involved, and the licensing as pilots all happening. And you guys at Aqualine Drones have really stepped up in that capacity too. It's essentially, I would imagine, more than the other half of what your company does.
Yes, and I can give credit to Senator Richard Blumenthal and also Senator Chris Murphy, who worked in concert with Rick Scott to co-author the American Security Drone Act of 2019, which essentially bans all public agencies from using federal dollars to procure drone or drone programs. We do have the technology here in the U.S. There are serious security concerns as far as using drones or drone technology from covered countries. And so the idea is that we do have the ability to build a new manufacturing ecosystem here in Connecticut and other parts of the country. But since we're here in Connecticut, I guess, we're talking about us. And so how cool would it be for us to be doing that, but also exporting technology from Connecticut, specific to drone and cloud computing technology.
Excellent. Let's give you a rest, Barry, and switch gears and talk to Chief Ballou. Chief, when was the first time you actually heard about or saw the utilization of a drone for fire services and said, hey, that's something we could probably use here in Waterbury?
So probably in the last 4 or 5 years, you've seen an increased use of drone applications within the fire service. From down south, out west, you'll see them in the, just on newsreels and in the periodicals, the professional periodicals, you'll see an increase in reporting on their applications. And it really was an eye-opener as to how many ways you can utilize a drone in the fire service, from search and rescue to observation, as Barry touched, from post-incident analysis, but more importantly, pre-planning. In some of the urban settings in the Northeast, you have sprawling vacant factory settings that cover multiple acres, 10, 14, 17 acres. And in the last 5 years, we've had 5 major industrial fires. And the drone in those instances would have been a real critical component, not only during the growing stages of the fire and during operations, but post for investigation purposes. To be able to get a 360-degree view from a higher angle would really aid investigators. And in the pre-planning side of it, you could actually visualize a building up close and take a look at what hazards or what dangers would be, firefighters would be facing upon arrival. Things that we wouldn't see from the ground, loose mortar on parapets, walls that may be buckling or pushing out because the roof is compromised and you've got some frost damage over a period of winter, mm-hmm. summer cycles here in New England. Those are the things that we could appreciate quickly and incorporate into pre-plan analysis and would, you know, really benefit the firefighters in general. Search and rescue in itself, the city of Waterbury has five reservoirs that cover a great, great swath of property, and they're distributed throughout the area here, and there's a lot of acreage that goes with them. So just downed even city employees who happen to be doing maintenance of those. Observation, search and rescue applications. It's really cool. Within this city, we have a lot of opportunity for hazardous material incident. We have the Yankee Natural Gas peak shaving facility. King Industries is constructing down in Chase River Road. They're a lubricant manufacturer. There's just a bunch of them. And I'll give you an example. 2 weeks ago, in a regional basis, the city of Waterbury responded to Southington to assist in an anhydrous ammonia leak. When you have a hazardous material incident, the standard response is to put somebody in a level A suit. They're in the SCBA, they're encapsulated, and they go in and they physically assess the situation. Sometimes you might be looking at an environment you don't want to put a person in initially without some additional information. Just to be able to access placarding, DOT placarding, CFR placarding, to gain an appreciation of what the material is. Or maybe you can identify exactly where the breach or the leak is occurring before putting people into harm's way. That's where a drone could be applied. And that would give you some real-time knowledge before you commit resources. So those are some of the things. But I think the capabilities of drone application are still expanding.
And your department is now partnering to some degree with Aquiline Drones. Give us an idea of where Waterbury FD is right now in that process.
So obviously we're in the initial stages. We have 8 individuals on the department who are currently participating in an online certification course or actually online training just to get them the basics of understanding unmanned vehicles and what you need to do to get to the next step for licensure and operation. So we don't currently deploy a drone. So we're very much in the learning stages. The reception has been positive so far for the guys who have had the opportunity to delve into it. And we're hoping that going down the road, we could expand into some greater technologies to assist us. When I got on the job, we didn't even have radios for every member of the department. The radios were relegated to the driver and the officer. Well, now everyone carries a radio with an emergency button on it. Prior to my coming on the job, you'd only have one SCBA per apparatus. Now everybody wears an air pack.
And heaven forbid you had to call in a helicopter for something. That could be an hour, 2 hours wait, right?
Yeah, as far as I know.
You never had to call in any kind of air cover?
Yeah, the only air cover that's ever been called in that I'm aware of would be for medical evacuation.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I don't know if there's capability out there for hazardous materials for any type of manned vehicle. I don't know how to want to put anybody in a hot zone. And that's the beautiful thing about a drone, because when you have hazardous materials, you have the hot zone, the warm zone, and the cold zone. Cold zone being where you're safe, and that's where a command post would be. The warm zone is the interchange area where people coming out of the hot area are cleaned, they're decontaminated, donning and doffing. Mm. And then the hot zone, which you don't want to be in. Well, the drone can go into the hot zone right away. That's big.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So, Barry, you touched upon the kind of the homeland security aspect of domestic production of drones. Can you talk a little bit more about why you're one of the leading advocates for this product to go American-made and dominate the market?
I spent the better part of 32 years as a professional aviator, in many different job functions, and also carrying key responsibilities as an airline pilot, you know, flight instructor, aircraft mechanic, director of operations, chief pilot, airplanes, helicopters, what have you. My last job was with a company called Atlas Air, flying 747s around the world, mainly in support of U.S. military operations through, you know, the Air Mobility Command. And so I had an opportunity to go into just about every country around the world, you know, I mean, quite a bit into and out of China. And I can tell you firsthand that you will not find American drones or American-made drones flying around Chinese airspace. So it's somewhat of a trifling disappointment that here we are embracing technology from, you know, covered countries with no, you know, reciprocal arrangement in place. Secondary to that is the fact that there are legitimate security concerns. And to think that, you know, that is overlooked on a daily basis or has been overlooked for quite some time, knowing that there are, you know, formidable alternatives that can be, you know, put in place. So for this to be happening now, in the year 2021, I mean, we can obviously celebrate, you know, that happening, but we need to, you know, support that effort at every level. It's not just the responsibility of, you know, the business community, of which Aquiline is part of, but also the responsibility of government at the federal, state, and municipal level, working in concert to ensure that we provide absolute benefit, security, and protection for the citizens.
So you've launched Flight to the Future, and in great part that is involving your offer to actually train emergency services like you're doing with Chief Ballou here in Waterbury all around the country.
Yes, yes. Flight to the Future was conceptualized about 4 years ago. And it's, you know, it's a multi-million dollar production effort, essentially surrounding the concept of drone technology, drone and cloud computing technology. Mm-hmm. And that was designed to provide the average person an access point into the sphere of drones. And so here we are on the backside of COVID, now that we have, you know, somewhat, you know, double-digit unemployment numbers, people looking for opportunities to retool and, you know, find themselves in, you know, a six-figure paying job. You know, drone technology as a drone service provider allows individuals to do that. But more specifically to, you know, the effort here, we saw the need to reward or to thank our first responders by giving them access to that training platform free of charge, so that there's essentially no excuse why a first responder or department would not adopt something that provides absolute benefit to their program. And so I'm very, very happy to be in a position that, you know, Aquiline can support units like, you know, the Waterbury Fire Department. You know, the chief just mentioned a short while ago that they currently do not have any, you know, infrastructure. And I would like to commit, you know, in person and on the air that we will provide the first wave of drones and access to our, you know, cloud infrastructure to support, you know, all the post-data analysis and modeling and everything else that's needed to put together a very strong drone technology program.
Wow. How about that?
Well, I thank Barry for the commitment to put me on the spot here.
I didn't know it caught me by surprise.
I don't know that I have the authority to accept that commitment, but I thank him. I think it's a generous offer.
We'll put you through the right channels, Barry, because I'm sure government officials from Senators Murphy and Blumenthal on down to Mayor O'Leary and many others will also appreciate the fact that you're not just putting out the training and now the offer, at least, of the hardware, but you're putting a lot of people to work.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, workforce development is at a crucial stage in the U.S. And this Flight to the Future represents, you know, a very strong workforce development initiative that serves to benefit everyone across many spectrums, whether it be disadvantaged, disenfranchised communities. And so it's no it's equally important to recognize, you know, those who I employed as far as, you know, the benefit of that to the service that they provide mm-hmm. in the area of first responders being able to use that to save lives, essentially, which at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. And so, yes, we can do everything that we say we are going to do. I'm hoping that, you know, the chief and his department are in a position to accept the offer of free hardware. Mm. They did commit to getting all their individuals into our program. We are seeing, you know, quite a robust enrollment effort nationwide as we speak on a daily basis of law enforcement and firefighters nationwide enrolling into the Flight to the Future program. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the hope is that, you know, we could create a groundswell, if you may, and address drone technology or the use of drone technology in key areas where it benefits society the most, and that we can cut across all the, you know, barriers to entry for, you know, those individuals.
Very good. Chief, last word, if there are other fire service leadership listening, volunteer or paid, your ideas on utilizing drones, no matter what size the department, to keep both the firefighting professionals as well as their communities safer?
Yeah, absolutely. I think regardless of the size of the department or whether they're a volunteer or career department, we face similar challenges. The scope and size of what we do may change based on the locality, but the demand for the service doesn't go away. And I think if you can apply newer technologies to make your responses more efficient and to assist the public in general, I think it furthers the whole mission of fire services across the nation. I don't see a downside to it.
Thank you. And Barry Alexander, Aquiline Drones, where do people go for more information?
For more information, you could go to aquilinedrones.com. Specific to the Flight to the Future program, you could go to flighttothefuture.com. There you will find everything you need to know to enroll in the online drone pilot training program. And thereafter, you could also go to info@aquilinedrones.com to send in information if you're a first responder here in Connecticut or nationwide to provide us the information that we would need to have you fully enrolled in the program for free.
Very good. Thank you so much. Waterbury Fire Chief Terry Ballew, thank you for having us to your office. And Barry Alexander, founder and CEO of Aquiline Drones, thank you for your service and the work that you're going to continue to do, not just as a for-profit industry, but a for-profit industry that recognizes the importance of partnering with municipal, community, state, and federal organizations to not only bring drone production and hardware production of the products and services that you sell back to the U.S., but to your programs that are forwarding public assistance and public safety. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program for the people. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, You can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.